If I were to say the letters WWF, would you know what I was referring to? Well, the answer to that could well be World Wildlife Fund. If you asked young people, maybe you would get World Wrestling Federation. I'm not a great fan of wrestling, but I know a lot of young people, and especially guys, who are into it. Today it's known as WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. And in the reading that Robert brought to us not so long ago, we have a wrestling match. It's probably the most famous wrestling match ever. It's certainly the first record we have of wrestling, and it's found in our scriptures. The context is this. Jacob is the younger twin son of Isaac and Rebekah, and he's returning home after having been away for about 14 years. With him are his wives, Leah and Rachel. And Jacob is about to cross over into the promised land, and there he's going to encounter his twin brother Esau. However, Jacob is very fearful of what this encounter might entail. You see, going back in time, Jacob had tricked his brother Esau out of his birthright. Then, with the help of his mother, Rebekah, he had tricked his father Isaac into blessing him instead of his brother. Having done this, he fled away to his mother's brother, Laban, and there he married Laban's daughter, Leah, and then his other daughter, Rachel. For Laban, he also deceived his uncle. So the whole of Jacob's life till this point is one of deception and deceiving people. In Genesis 32 and verses 9 to 12, we have here Jacob's prayer concerning this moment in his life. He's troubled. So now he turns to God and he prays for deliverance from Esau. He claims God's promise to bless and prosper him and his descendants. And this is the context of where we find Jacob this night. He's beside the river Jabbok in the valley of Peniel. There's a significant phrase that occurs in verse 24 of this narrative. Jacob, because he's scared of what his brother Esau will do, has sent his two wives and the rest of his family across the river Jabbok. And verse 24 contains for us this phrase: "This left Jacob all alone in the camp." Friends, it would be very easy to pass that phrase by. Well, it's just a little bit of incidental information. But I want to suggest to you that that phrase is significant. Jacob is alone. And all the things that he had previously depended upon, those things that he had valued, those things that he had treasured, have all been removed from him. Only he is left in this valley of Peniel. He's alone as the sun sets and as night draws near. He is alone and about to encounter God. It's a reminder to us that on occasions, solitude with God is important. It's good, it's important, indeed it's vital that we should have fellowship with others. But there comes a time and there comes a moment, a God-ordained moment in time, when it's necessary for us to be alone with God. And this is such a moment in the life of this old patriarch Jacob. All his life he has maneuvered and manipulated situations. He's used people to get what he wants. And now he is alone. He's alone in the darkness of the night that actually only reflects the darkness of the situation before him. Jacob thought he was alone. But the next sentence tells us more. And a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. Again, it's a simple statement, yet full of significance. A man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. And here is a battle for Jacob's soul. Here is a battle to and fro for authority, for superiority, for control of Jacob's life. It's significant that when the new day dawns, when the light shatters the darkness, that Jacob is a defeated man. And the symbolism of this darkness of Jacob's soul being shattered by the light of an angel of the Lord reflects the darkness of night being overcome by the dawn of a new day. We find similar imagery in the Gospel of John. Remember that occasion when Nicodemus comes to Jesus. He comes to Jesus in the dark, in the night. And he comes to Jesus, the one who is the light of the world, who's the one who is able to replace that darkness with his own light. And so we're told in this narrative that Jacob wrestled. He battled, he struggled all night. And he refused to submit until it was utterly unavoidable. And even then, it was only due to the dislocation of his hip. Now, a doctor will tell you that it takes immense force to dislocate a hip. And there can be long-term consequences as a result. And in this story, we're told that the man touches Jacob's hip. The phrase, he wrenches it out of its socket. And Jacob is rendered defenseless. And yet even in the midst of defeat, Jacob will not let go of the one with whom he is struggling. If he must submit, if he must admit defeat, then above everything else, he wishes to be blessed by the champion. And so in verse 26, we're told that Jacob refuses to let go of the one with whom he's fought and battled and struggled throughout the night. And he only releases his grip when he has been blessed. And Jacob bows in submission to the one who is greater, to the one who has touched his hip, to the one who has rendered him helpless, and he seeks his blessing. And then what follows changes Jacob's life forever. Verses 27 to 28. The man, or as some other translations have it, the angel of the Lord asks Jacob his name. And then he proceeds to give Jacob a new name. His name is changed from deceiver to God strives, or Israel. Jacob is given a new name, along with his new walk, but he limped for the rest of his life. The night that Jacob was crippled became the night of his greatest blessing. The night that he was crippled was the night that he entered a new relationship with God. And this in turn flowed over into a new relationship with his brother Esau. Every step that Jacob took from this moment forward reminded him of this night, the moment, the evening he wrestled with the angel of the Lord at Peniel. And it reminded him of how God blessed him through the pain of a dislocated hip. Well, as we read on, we discover what happens to Jacob next. Jacob wants some answers. He asks, "Who have I been wrestling with?" But the one with whom he's been wrestling doesn't reveal his name. Instead, we're just simply told in verse 29, he blesses Jacob. And it's in this blessing that Jacob comes to realize who it is that he struggled with all evening. In verse 30, Jacob realizes that he has encountered and been struggling with none other than God himself. He's been touched by God. Painful though it was and is, Jacob has been touched and blessed by God. But Jacob also realizes the immense mercy of God in that he is still alive. He's been blessed. He's had a face-to-face encounter with the living God, and he survived. He's still alive. And Jacob is humbled by this. And as a result, he can only give thanks, for his life has been spared. And so in verse 31, we're told that the sun rises, a new day dawns. It's the first day of a new way of life for Jacob. He has a new name. He has a new relationship with God. He has a new and restored relationship with his brother Esau. He has a new walk that constantly reminds him of the night that he struggled with God until day broke and he was blessed by God himself. The truth is that for all of his life, until this moment, Jacob had struggled with God and against God. He struggled against God's will and plan for his life. He struggled against God's timing of events. Jacob was a man who struggled with God all of his life, until he was prepared to let go of the reins and allow God to be in control. For all of his life up to this point, Jacob had sought to manipulate. He'd sought to maneuver people and situations to speed things up. Jacob all the time had thought that he was in control. And probably he even thought at the outset of this evening he was still in control. And so he sends his family and his servants away so that he would be alone. He holds on to the angel of the Lord. He refuses to let go of him. And the truth was that in Jacob's life, even though he hadn't seen it to this point, that God was taking the initiative all the way along. Look at verse 9 in Genesis 32. We're told there that it was God who told Jacob to head home. It was God who brought him to the valley of Peniel to have his face-to-face encounter with the living God. And somewhere in the depths of his heart and his life, God awakened a hunger in the heart of Jacob for home. to go back to the promised land, to be where God's people were supposed to be. Brothers and sisters, you remember that wonderful story in Luke 15, the parable of the prodigal son. And there we read too that it was hunger that brought the son home. He remembered his father's house. He remembered the food on the table. He remembered the warm acceptance and fellowship of family life. And the heart of that younger son was stirred, even when he was in a pigsty, to go home. And so it is with Jacob. This crisis in Jacob's life awakens his hunger. It didn't determine the outcome. It was God who determined the outcome. And Jacob's new name attests to his new standing before God and before the people of God. This mark of God's grace in his life wiped away the old rebuke of Genesis 27:36 of being named Jacob. The one who deceives, Jacob, the deceiver, he is now given a new name. He's called Israel. God strives for him. God strives on his behalf. Jacob struggles with God and men, and he overcomes. Jacob's new name becomes an accolade to live up to. But Jacob now also has a new walk, both physically and spiritually. He's no longer walking as a deceiver, no longer walking in deception, no longer walking in sin, but he's been touched by God. He walks in forgiveness and grace. And Jacob realizes that this new life, this new name and this new walk, he now has a new relationship with God. And this new relationship with God spills over into a new relationship with his brother Esau. Jacob's restored relationship with God leads him to no longer fear meeting his twin brother Esau. If God can forgive him for his deception, for his past life, then so can Esau. And so Jacob lives with this new blessing. Oh yes, long ago Jacob had deceived his father Isaac into blessing him. But there's no deception in this blessing that Jacob currently experiences. This blessing that is now upon his life is not tarnished by deception. This blessing doesn't rely on an old man being blind or being confused by goatskin or the taste of food. This blessing relies solely on the grace and mercy of God. The old blessing that Jacob was living under was stolen. This new blessing is freely given. And what a difference it makes when we submit our lives to God. So, brothers and sisters, as we close today, what's the application of the story for our lives? I dare to say that there comes a point in all of our lives, be it when we're young, whether we're middle-aged, or whether we're elderly, there comes a point in all of our lives when we need to have an encounter with the living God. And it could be that for some of you watching today, this day could be your day. Today could be the day that God is bringing you to your own valley of Peniel. Today may well be the day when you come face to face and have an encounter with the living God. But there comes a time when God brings you to a moment of crisis in your life, not to hurt you, but to reveal himself and bring blessing to you. Now, these times of confrontation, these times of crisis, these times of blessing could well be painful. Because often in these moments of crisis, in these moments of confrontation, your life is exposed. Your sin is confronted. But like Jacob of old, when the morning comes, a new day dawns. And that new light of the new day dawns upon your soul, and you recognize that a new relationship with God has begun, and it flows down into new relationships with your family and with others. I don't know where you are this morning. You may well be in a situation like Jacob was. It may be that from this day on, you will limp the rest of your life because of your struggle with God. But that limp will forever remind you of the evening, of that moment when you struggled with God and you refused to let him go until he blessed you. And this, my friends, is the secret of this whole encounter with God. Jacob refused to let go of God. He refused to let go until God blessed him. And it isn't that Jacob forced God's hand, but that God doesn't bless those who are half-hearted in their encounters with him. Remember that warning of the letter to the believers in Laodicea in Revelation chapter 3? Where in that letter, the brothers and sisters or the followers of Jesus were found to be lukewarm in their relationship with God. And God says, "I will spit you out of my mouth." It's a teaching that's given by Christ in the parable of the persistent widow. We need to persist. We need to keep knocking. We need to keep seeking. We need to keep persevering, holding on and refusing to let go until we know that God is with us and blesses us. Maybe this is God's word for you this day, to hold on tight, to refuse to let go until the morning breaks and his blessing comes. I think that there are many of us who can readily identify with this passage. We too have struggled in the night, but we have experienced and we know the blessing that has come in the morning. Some of you right at this moment may well be struggling with God. There's a great battle being waged over who holds the reins in your life. And the wrestle is taking place. It may well be painful, but it's a struggle with your habits and your desires and your possessions and your attitudes. And maybe God is about to touch you, painful as it will be. You'll have no choice but to submit because you know the better way. You'll hold on for blessing that will come with the dawning of the light and your submission to his will. For some of you this morning, maybe you need to remember the limp. You need to remember that moment when God dislocated your life in order that he might be the God of your life. Some of you have forgotten that moment. You've started to wander away. Like the believers in Laodicea, you've lost your first love. You're becoming encumbered with things that have taken your love for God away. Your heart for God has grown cold. You've become embittered. You've become dissatisfied. And God's not as real to you today as he once was. Brothers and sisters, remember what the limp signifies. That limp in your life signifies your new name. When you came to Christ, when you received God's blessing, you took on the name Christian, follower of Jesus, one who is in the way. And we remind ourselves of the promise in John chapter 1, verse 12, to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. You have a new name. The limp signifies your new walk. And this walk is a call to holiness of life. The Apostle Peter in chapter 1, in 1 Peter 1, verse 14 to 15, listen to what he says. You own the name Christian. This is how you're to walk. You must live as God's obedient children. Don't slip back into your old ways of living to satisfy your own desires. You didn't know any better then. But now you must be holy in everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy. So we have a new name. We have a new walk. And that limp also signifies to us our new relationship. Our relationship with God. And our relationship with others, because we belong to a new family. God has called us by name. He's called you by name. He has adopted you. You belong to him. And so again, the Apostle Peter writes in 1 Peter 2, verses 9 and 10, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. You see, brothers and sisters, we can't be Christians in isolation. We have responsibilities to the members of our new family. And so this limp signifies to us our new name and our new walk and our new relationship. It also reminds us of the new blessing that we have received from God himself. Maybe for some who are watching and listening, this day is the dawning of light in your soul. Maybe right at this moment, God is saying to you, listen, the struggle's over. The work's been done. It's finished. Remember those wonderful words that are found in the Gospel of John, chapter 3, verses 16 to 17. This is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. God sent his Son into the world not to judge the world but to save the world through him. So here's the blessing. Believe in Jesus. God's blessing is about to come into your life. And if this is the case, you need to hold on even tighter to God at this moment. Wherever you are, whatever circumstances you find yourself in, there's a lesson here for you. We are all called to hold on to God, to struggle and wrestle with God in prayer. It took 20 years for Jacob to reach this point in his life. 20 years in which he walked many roads away from God. 20 years he deceived many people. He manipulated many situations. But in God's time, he was touched by God. And in that moment, Jacob moved from death to life, from self-help to faith encounter. He moved into the presence of God who crippled him in order to bless him. So, brothers and sisters, my prayer this morning is that each of us will have a face-to-face encounter with God. Even if it's painful, even if it hurts, even if it brings trial and difficulty, even if we're left with a limp, I pray that you will experience God's blessing upon your life. Remember the promise. You have a new name. You have a new walk. You have a new relationship. You have a new blessing with none other than the living God. Amen.